labeled the strike as another maneuver by national opposition forces to destabilize the government led by National Front Farabundo Martí for National Liberation. The government officials stressed that the Salvadoran people defeated the criminal gangs that forced transportation workers to stop working, particularly in the capital, San Salvador. Since July the 27th, public transportation in the capital was brought to a halt by transport companies' executives who mentioned violent threats by criminal gangs as the cause.
Victims of the environmental contamination caused by U.S. oil company Chevron in Ecuador's Amazon rejected a U.S. ruling that Ecuador must pay a big sum to Chevron in damages. The District of Columbia Court of Appeals ruled on Tuesday that Ecuador must pay $96 million to the multinational, which is involved in a lengthy dispute over the exploitation of oil resources in the country. Chevron was originally
set. And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Gloria, at the festival you worked for the Independent Research Service.
That's right.
Well, exactly when did your own association with the CIA start, and in what fashion? Did they come to you, or did you go to them?
In 1958, when I came home from India, I discussed with student leaders, past and present, many of them active with the National Student Association, this kind of small foundation to encourage Americans to go. They thought it was a good idea, too. I was then told by foundations and professors and friends that I should not do this, that I would get in trouble with the House on American Activities Committee, the American Legion, all of those 50s people. And I became convinced that it was impossible. It was at that point that the student leaders said to me that they had in the past received funds for international programs from the CIA and that they felt that this was important and could also be partly funded by the CIA.
Well, I mean, did you feel that you really tried? I mean, did you go around to all of the wealthy private foundations, wealthy private people, and explain your point of view and explain why you felt it was important that the United States be represented at these things in a certain way? What did they tell you?
They told me that, well, the Ford Foundation, for instance, told me that they thought we were too liberal and too controversial and that we would endanger their cultural programs in Austria. I mean, the first festival was being held in Vienna. It was not encouraging at all. And the private individuals to whom I went often had particular points of view to put forward, which would have been much, much more restricting than the CIA funds were, which were free. I mean, no one was told what to say.
What do you mean they were free? You mean to say it was easier for you to work for the CIA than a private organization?
That's right. That's right. And the reason I think that comes as a surprise, as it did to me at the time. I mean, I had the conventional liberals' view of the CIA as a right-wing incendiary group. And I was amazed to discover that this was far from the case, that they were enlightened, liberal, nonpartisan activists of the sort who characterized the Kennedy administration, for instance.
You have not been working now for the CIA since 1962.
Mm-hmm.
You still criticize. You were down recently in Washington?
Yes, when the story broke that I had once been, that I have for 4 years been a Central Intelligence agent, I was demonstrating outside the Pentagon underneath Mr. McNamara's office against bombing in Vietnam. And this didn't precisely fit with the image of a CIA agent, but then neither does the CIA.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Well, I know I'm probably going to say something that will shock some of your viewers, but I think part of the problem is that we were deceived. And I don't have any problem saying this, even though it's offended many people. The idea that Barack Obama is a Christian is laughable.
Thank you. I keep saying that. Thank you.
It's laughable. This is a man who has deceived the country, lied about who he really is. And it's obvious from all the statements that he's made, this is not a Christian country if it ever was. And I only read the Bible when it's not an esoteric text. In other words, I pick and choose what I like and what I don't like. And I read this, that, and the other. Barack Obama is at best a confused man, is at worst has the sensibilities, and I don't know how this combination works, of an atheist and a Muslim. You know, Victoria, we've got to deal with the fact, and I know there are a lot of Americans of African descent who have not come to grips with this, but we're really dealing with an evil presence. I really believe that.
So this is Jen Gorlick. I'm an activist in D.C. I support a free and unoccupied Palestine, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Internet radio for smarter originals.
Radio.
This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on RadioNetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at headonradionetwork.com. There's a listen live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on RadioNetwork.com. About 8 minutes past the hour, and it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Both lines are open, 304-663-HORN. That's the stress line. And 304-574-8178 being the other line. We used to call it the Skype line. That confuses people. And, oh, my goodness, look here. It's none other than the Angry Indian. Angry, how are you? That's a serious delay, he said, and yet, oddly enough, there's no delay. We're still raising money for that thing.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me now?
I got you great.
All right, what's up?
I don't know. What's happening, man?
A lot. I was in and out, but I was listening to you and Ron, and you had asked me on, you know, over Skype what I thought was going on with Black Lives Matter and Bernie Sanders.
Right, because you're up in that neck of the woods. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't go, but my radio producer went, and she said that she actually kind of wasn't surprised that it happened the way it happened because of how things went down the last time Sanders was approached like that. So he, you know, from what she told me, he just decided not to engage and pretty much just let them take the stage. What I want to connect to what Ron was saying, though, is when you were, you know, talking about what's been going on with Big Hole and the damage to the waterways and what have you. It's the same sort of thing. These people are being poisoned by the mines. They're being poisoned by mountaintop removal. They're being poisoned by the crapola that's sold at the Piggly Wiggly. Because there's not much else unless you grow their own food and grow their own livestock. They have to purchase what's there. And, you know, they're so afraid, and you can't blame them to have anything change. So the same people now who were, you know, complaining about the, you know, the lefties, the commies are coming in to take my jobs, they're now being laid off by these same firms, by these same capitalists, by these same Republicans for the most part, unless, you know, you're talking about Joe Manchin or whatever. You know, they don't realize how they got stuck. And what Ron said was true. You know, they have a real, and you and I have talked about this before, they have a real hard time blaming their own group, blaming themselves in terms of their own political ignorance in a lot of ways. Their political naivete on what happened. And with, you know, what's happened with Black Lives Matter, you know, my argument is there's a ton of Republicans that they could be hitting with this sort of protest. They're not doing that. And when she was asked on the on a recent Black Politics podcast why they don't go after Hillary Clinton like that, she said, well, it's primarily because of the security. That's the main reason why we're not doing it.
Couldn't get within a mile of her.
Well, that might be true, but that still doesn't wash any, you know, any water with me, because if you're going to go after one specific candidate, when you have Hillary Clinton, you have the O'Malley, which nobody really knows anything about, right? And we're talking about the Democrats. But really, who the hell is really going to slam down this policy? I mean, if you're really going to go after anybody, go after Hillary Clinton, because she was there, you know, in the advisory role, right? You know, unofficially, you know, as first lady, when her husband was sending so many people of color to the joint. You know, for selling crack cocaine, for selling marijuana. Racial profiling came back into the federal government with this. The omnibus crime bill. You know, most people who have followed Clinton know about this. And in her age group is something that she's heard of. But I really have a problem with this, because, you know, you're not going after Hillary Clinton. And like I said, you know, Bernie Sanders has a bit of a shady voting record, too, in terms of, you know, gun rights in Vermont. And he actually voted to have was part of the group that was, you know, down with having Assad Shakur extradited from Cuba, which is a police brutality case. You know, and for that police brutality case, she's the only woman on the terrorist, the top 10 wanted list, right?
Yeah.
So if they're going to get on Bernie Sanders, get on him for, you know, for contradictions like that. But, you know, Hillary Clinton is really the problem here. The GOP is the bigger problem here. You know, Trump has said things about black people, too. You know, he doesn't want black people counting his money. He only wants people with yarmulkes counting his money. So he doesn't like Jews.
Oh, I forgot about that one. That was just charming.
Yeah, you know, he doesn't like black people. He doesn't like Jews. He doesn't like Mexicans unless they're working for him. And then his company goes to get 1,300 fucking visas and shit, you know, to allow this to happen. His own staff in his home, you know, some of them are not legal. I understand. So he's a fucking hypocrite. And, you know, he's doing this because he's just an egomaniac. And, yeah, he's shaking things up. But now the conspiracy theories are fucking all over the goddamn place. So now he's a plant of Hillary Clinton, right? Now he and Hillary Clinton are working with each other.
Yeah.
And we're ignoring the fact, and I'm talking about a lot of people in the Black Lives Matter bit, they're ignoring the fact that the same lobbyists that the GOP is using, they're working for Hillary Clinton, too. She's taking their money, too. So, you know, if you're going to get on Sanders, again, criticize him, sure. But don't make him the central point of this entire police brutality thing. You know, that's ridiculous. Not when you have an entire field of goddamn politicians on both ends of this who have been supporting exactly what the fuck has been going on.
Well, let's take a minute, Angry. Hang on a second. As someone who's done a little bit of activism and done a little bit on the more, I guess we'd say, well-heeled side of it, where you politely go into congressional offices, blah, 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 blah. Are they saying that they're not going after the Republicans because if a Republican wins the White House, they're just going to acknowledge that black lives don't matter to Republicans and, sit idly by while the police just gun down pretty much whomever they please with impunity?
I don't know, you know, and that's what bugs me, is that I've asked, you know, I'm being very general here, because somebody's going to say, well, he just, you know, slammed the entire movement. No, you know, the movement is just like anything else. You hear about the people who are more vocal. You hear about the folks who really want to be heard. And in general, you hear about the people who are a little more arrogant, you know, I mean, this is the truth of it, who insist on being heard. Now, you know, part of this bullshit, whether people want to, you know, accept this or not, same thing with Israel and what's going on in Occupy Palestine. You have to talk to the other fucking side. You have to listen to what people are fucking saying. You're not going to understand what the fuck where they're coming from if you're not trying to understand where the fuck they're coming from. Now, if you don't have to like it, but you have to fucking listen if you have any common sense. You can't beat anybody if you don't know where the fuck they're coming from. And, you know, it just gets me that when I ask a lot of these Black Lives Matter people, it's like a lot of people in the BDS movement, you know, against Israel. Okay, what is the end result? Okay, well, we want Israel to leave Palestine. Okay, what? Two-state solution? One state? Okay, what happens to these right-wing Jews then who don't have a country? What do you think is going to happen? That's going to be an entire wave of terrorism, you know, which is what, you know, Israel is based on in the first place. You have to find something.
Yeah, hello, Ergun.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, and the Haganah. They were both together on that, and the British knew about it.
Look at this recent story. I guess it's a positive step forward that the radical Israelis who burned a child alive have actually been indefinitely detained.
Well, they had to. They really had to, because the settler situation has really, it's been bad, and it's gone in waves. Like, you remember when Baruch Goldstein, or is it Goldstein on the side of the pond, you know, went into a mosque and shot a bunch of men while they were praying. You know, the IDF had to cut him down. And now he's considered to be a saint. You know, he wasn't born in Israel or Palestine. He was born and raised right in the United States and picked up and went over there. And, you know, decided, like a lot of people, like most colonialists do, to pick and choose, you know, bits and pieces of religion, throw in a mix of, you know, whatever the fuck you want into it, and claim that God gave you this goddamn land. You know, it's the same thing that's being said here. And a lot of this has a lot to do, at least it, you know, could if I had enough time, with the Black Lives Matter movement too. What exactly is it that you're trying to do? Are you trying to reform the police? You know, some people are saying get rid of the police altogether. And it's like, you know, wait a fucking minute. Hold on. You know, what are you really fucking saying here? It's like there's some people saying that nobody should ever be shot by the police. And it's like, wait a fucking minute. Hold up. You know, we're not having a real discussion here because people are emotional. And they want to be heard. And they want to be seen. And yes, I'm angry every fucking time I have to look at my goddamn Twitter account and see about a young Black man being shot or a young sister being fucked over. And it happens just about every fucking day. If you actually look at the information, it's out here, it's happening. But at the same time, you know, back in the 70s, because I'm old enough to remember this, and so are you, we had some kind of an idea of what it is that we wanted. Either reform or we want our own fucking thing. But, you know, nowadays, if we're loud and we shout and if we embarrass the fuck out of Bernie Sanders, then somehow we're going to make change. And no. It doesn't work like that. It's the same thing when you're talking about your community with the workers here who are out. They got to be looking at this river and saying, what the fuck? The air. How many people are in the goddamn doctor all the time in your community in Appalachia, Bob, you know, who are sick because of what the fuck is going on, even if they don't work in the coal industry?
Sure. That's the whole point. If you're living up a holler somewhere underneath a mountaintop removal operation, you may not even be working for the company. You're just breathing what the company drops on you every day. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're a school teacher. Maybe you're a teller at a bank.
But you're
in it. You're in the soup. I mean, if you're making boiled frog soup and you happen to be a shrimp in there, it don't mean that you're any less soup.
Well, Upton Sinclair made it very clear a long time ago. A person's, you know, attitudes as far as what goes on in society are directly connected to their paycheck. And if you look at, you know, all of what, you know, Trump is talking about, you know, my wife is like, I still don't understand why he's number one. I don't understand this. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't understand this?
He speaks for Republican values.
Well, he speaks for a lot of values. I've gotten, it's been a while since we talked. A couple of Democrats I know, and they tell me that they're Democrats, right? Yeah. They got drunk and started telling me, well, you know, maybe Trump isn't all that bad. You know, why shouldn't there be a fence between Mexico? And I was like, well, why shouldn't there be a fence then between Canada and U.S.? Maybe that's not a bad idea. And I'm like, you're really telling leadership. Well, I think that Hillary might come in and decide that that's the right option. Maybe he doesn't have a bad idea. There is so much fucking confusion out there, Bob.
Oh, this is going to, I mean, every presidential election, I mean, 12 was weird. 8 was weird. 2000 was just a nightmare.
Well, that was a ripoff.
Well, it was. It was. But it seems like we're on a continuum of weirdness, and it just keeps getting more so. Every time we think, well, that's better. But no, between now and November 2016, what, a year and 3 months?
Yeah, but the empire is collapsing. White people feel that they've lost everything because, you know, some fucking radical faggots went and elected Barack Obama. The goddamn communist Muslim gay people elected Barack Obama. So, you know, we've lost everything. Go on YouTube. There were people crying when that man was elected. And when he was reelected, even though you can look at the fucking numbers and see how many people still supported this shit, they were still crying.
No, no, no. Now they're even screaming more loudly. That classic woman in Indiana from a couple of weeks ago, Islamic, screeching her fool head off.
Well, they see
and she's followed within a week by last week of the woman in the IHOP, the International House of Pancakes, because the goddess of irony never sleeps, hooting speak English at a woman who speaks English.
Yeah.
And then saying, yeah, because if you don't, we'll get the Russian Nazi Castros back. Back! Not, you know, not they'll get, but we'll get them back.
Hey, I was at a fucking, this was like one of the last powwows I ever went to. And it was in Seattle, too. And this white guy, I don't know what happened. He got angry with somebody and thought that these people, you know, because of their height, I suppose, were Mexican. Told them to get out of the United States and speak English. And he's at a fucking Native American powwow, right? So people told him, they said, you know, these guys are Duwamish or whatever. And he's like, oh, well, you know, they don't look it to me. They look like they're Mexicans. Look at their shoes. You know, I mean, we say that this is crazy.
Shoes?
But the shoes. Well, hey, Sheriff Arpaio's crowd of his gang down there, that's how they stop people. They assume that if you're wearing a certain type of footwear and if you wear a certain type of hat, and if you're not too tall and you're brown, you must be one of those Mexicans. You couldn't possibly be Apache, couldn't possibly be Nez Perce, right? You know, that's not possible. You couldn't possibly be a Mexican born in East L.A., maybe, for example, right? That's not possible. You have to be one of them. And, you know, again, the empire is falling. So these are folks who are looking for enemies everywhere. And, you know, we saw McCarthy. We saw what happened with that. But McCarthy didn't have Fox News, though. And he didn't have a cowardly goddamn Democratic Party, you know, an opposing party that is afraid to say anything because they are also trying to get these white ring fucking votes.
Well, I mean, that goes back to something Carol the other day. Carol said the other day, you know, there's all the outrage over what Donald Trump said about Megyn Kelly. And yet, there was absolutely none when Megyn Kelly referred to Trump calling other female human beings dogs, pigs, you know, you name it. And that Republican audience was just a sitting there, a clapping and a laughing. You know, that's a feature. You know, misogyny, racism.
Fascism.
These are features of the Republican Party, not flaws. And these are features of what is, because the Republican Party is, it has power that extends beyond its actual reach.
That's true.
Because the Republican Party is just a rump party of angry old white people now.
Yeah,
through the magic of things like voter suppression and gerrymandering, continue to cling to power.
Yeah,
but you can't be. I mean, the Eisenhower Republican, you know, Richie Cunningham's dad, he don't exist anymore. Okay, I mean, Donald Trump says he wants to make America great again. You know me; I'm a student of language. Angry. Make America great again implies that at some point in time, America has been great. Obviously, it hasn't been great during the reign of the Kenyan Muslim usurper. And it can't have been very great during the reign of error of dim leader, because Trump says that he opposed the Iraq War. Well, he can't say America was great under Bill Clinton because, well, you know, Mrs. Clinton. So that leaves you with the last time America was great was under Pappy Bush and Ronnie Reagan.
Yeah, but don't you remember when Ronald Reagan went to Philadelphia, Mississippi? What did he say? I want to make America great again. The shining city on the hill.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They're at the home of the Klan.
Right? He implied
Neshoba County.
That we lost it all. Because it's what I'm talking about. It's that ego thing. If I can't get my goddamn way, if the whole fucking thing doesn't think like me, then we need to fucking destroy it. Look at radical Islam. We can get into a long discussion on how they goddamn got that way, because it wasn't indigenous. It came in from Europe, and I can fucking prove it. But the bottom line that I'm trying to get down to is it got to the fucking point where fascism over there got so intense that, you know, many of these leaders, not just the bin Ladens. I'm talking about people like Saeed Qutb. I can't pronounce his name, but the man who founded the actual Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, they got to the point where they...
Well, more even than them. Here, let me bring up one of those blast from the past names that I just can't get out of my brain. How about Manoushehr Gurbanifar?
Gurbanifar. Hmm.
Remember him?
Yeah. Yeah, and we can get into his connections to a whole bunch of other people.
These things don't just happen. Okay.
No, those don't happen. Who gave him his money? Who was he connected to? When his name first started coming up, you know, who was he connected to? Where does Oliver North fit into this? You know, what happened with Iran-Contra? What happened with the Contras? What happened with Riels-Montt? You know, we can talk about a lot of these things. And they'll still say, I mean, they're talking all this nonsense about Obama and Iran, you know, where, again, I'm not a supporter of Obama, but look. Decent politics to decent politics. The United States cannot afford another goddamn conflict, especially in that motherfucking area of the world. Not now. All right?
Well, right. And as far as I'm concerned, and maybe I'll get some grief for this, but henceforward, whenever Charles Schumer is fonted on the TV,
oh, fuck him.
It should say --D-Israel, close paren.
Well, that and the fact that he was part of the whole gang of fucks who came up with the project for a new American century. He was the only Democrat that signed on to that fucking thing.
Well, that's only because they didn't ask Joe Manchin.
Oh, yeah, probably. Well, Hillary would have been down with it, too, you know, if they had probably approached
her. Let me back up a minute. Our conversations are a delight to me, Angry, because they refuse to follow conventions of lineality. So I want to back up to another one of those little web off ramps that we create along the way, and you were talking about people who want to just tear it all down, and you mentioned, you know, radical Islam, whatever. Well, I got a problem
because
with
it
the,
was easy.
I got it was easy. I know, but I got a problem with the little anarchists. Okay.
Oh yeah.
They're gonna show the man. You know, by busting plate glass windows and turning over mailboxes, okay, or spray painting something, and they, you know, and I, you know, the are we talking? This is the so-called Black Flag Bunch. Is that, are we talking about an offshoot of them in this business of going after Bernie? I mean, my head is beginning to spin.
No. The politics are different. The Black Bloc, the Black Bloc is, how can I explain this? It's really just a term. There is no group. There is nothing like that. Anarchists are just that. They're loose. You know, it's really difficult to get 10 anarchists to agree on any goddamn
right.
thing.
And,
it's
and,
difficult
and
to
that,
get one anarchist to agree on anything.
And that's one of the things that kind of makes my head hurt, Angry. I mean, there's a guy, I know him, who professes to be an anarchist. And oddly enough, the only time he shows up on my Facebook page is when I've said something about the Confederacy or the Confederate flag.
That's his particular pet peeve.
And we can't talk about slavery being a driving issue behind the Civil War because, it's and you know, it's the rich getting the poor to go and die. Well, sure it was, but they had to have something to rally around, and that was slavery. And so I don't know. You know, Michael and Madison said maybe the best thing in the world is to just let this thing slide. You know what happened to what happened with Bernie in Seattle over the weekend. And maybe it is because, you know, he went on to Portland and there were 25,000 people inside the Mott Center and 9,000 outside. And, you know, Hillary can't claim that. 20,000 people don't show up for Hillary.
No, I was outside and it was pretty live. I mean, I haven't seen that much fervor from the left in a long time. And there were a lot of people who were just curious, which was good.
And yet, you know what? On the one hand, I think those of us who support Bernie owe a debt of gratitude to the two women from who appointed themselves Black Lives Matter, because the Black Lives Matter movement made it clear pretty quick that no, we don't know these people. We owe them a debt of gratitude because looky, Bernie just got a ton of PR out of this.
Yeah, but
and there's no such thing as bad PR in a campaign that doesn't have millions of dollars.
Well, there is for him. In a couple of different ways. And the way I'm going to explain this is, you know, the fact that the people who actually started Black Lives Matter, whoever this particular group is, because, again, this is like Occupy, and it's a lot like the Black Bloc, is leaderless. There's no one person saying up, or no three or four people saying, well, we're the council and we're directing anything.
Right, well, that's a recipe for success.
Yeah, well, usually, because they don't really know who to go after. That's the only reason why the Occupy people survive. And you know what I'm talking about, because the authorities knew that there were hits on them, and the only reason they weren't carried through, from what we could see, is that they didn't know exactly who to hit. So, you know, because usually when you hear about, well, let's have a peace conference, let's have a peace talk, that's done on purpose. It's done to draw out the opposition so that you know who to attack. You get this, you know, get the head, the rest of the snake will let us go. And what we're seeing with this split between Black Lives, between these factions anyway, Black Lives Matter, is really just politics if you understand politics. Because I don't give a damn whether it's the Democrats, the Republicans, because we're limited by this ridiculous two-party system here. Unlike the rest of the world, is dealing with parliamentary politics. You know, the people who rise to the top are not necessarily the best people in the organization. I have become the office of political organizations simply because I showed up every goddamn time for a meeting. And if they asked for money, if I had it, I gave it to them because I showed up all the time. Not because I was necessarily the smartest person in the room, but because I had intent. Okay. And what ends up happening is, like I said, you know, the loudest
that
people,
happens quite a bit on our side. If you show
it
up,
it happens in politics, period. But it does happen, especially on the left, because really people get intimidated for some strange reason on the progressive end. But on the hard left, when you start to look at Romania, Polish politics, Russian politics under the Soviets. No, the left was just as hard and was fighting a life and death struggle against capitalism and willing to cut throats too. But it's the people who are pushy. And I have to say, I looked at the video a couple of times and I listened to the interview with her on the Black podcast, political podcast, and I have to say that, you know, she's being bombastic, she's being loud, she's being out there, and all that's cool. But nobody ever really heard of her before this. She pops up with this, and like I said, there's already a lot of, we don't know what to do, we don't really know what kind of decision to make, but somehow, by the grace of God, everything is going to fall together once we get this done, so we'll embarrass the fuck out of Bernie Sanders, and then what?
Yeah, but I don't think they embarrassed him, though.
No, they didn't embarrass him. This is what I'm getting to, because what it ended up doing was it embarrassed a lot of Black activists who don't do that, who don't put themselves and their community in that kind of position. Because when a white man speaks, he speaks for himself. When Black people speak, they speak for all fucking people.
Yeah, white folks speak individually. Black people speak collectively. You're a
collectively.
And there's always if the white guy likes it, or white woman, there's always one handy to say, well, my, oh, my, aren't you a credit to your race?
To your race. Well, see, that's already happening because people are saying that, well, the Black Lives Matter people who said that this, you know, these particular two young women were out of line, well, they're the good ones. And see, that's a really bad position to be put in, because now it's saying that we've already cornered you theoretically, in this particular thing, you've been painted into a corner. So if you act, you know, with any force, with any real, you know, gumption, well, you hate white people. And this is what the progressive left in Seattle is already doing, because the discussion is already in Portland now. Should we trust these black radicals? Yesterday, they were activists. Now, because of this, they're radicals. Because the idea is, you're not going to listen to anything.
Yeah, I don't see these two women as Huey, okay?
Well, they're not. But I mean, that's not how most people are going to take it, because they don't know how to...
Is it getting around up there in the neighborhood? And by that, I mean, you know, two entire gigantic states that would make, you know, about six West Virginias. But is it getting around up there that this one particular woman is some kind of bizarre, weirdo Christian nationalist?
I haven't heard that so far.
She's about one goddamn communion away from being a Christian Reconstructionist.
Oh yeah, but that's the other thing that we've talked about before. The GOP is counting on that, because they know that the majority of black folks are conservative thinking people, even though they don't politically vote that way. But they know most black families, you can't talk about homosexuality. I'm not even talking about being gay, Bob. I'm saying you can't even talk about it. You can't mention it. You can't tell your parents that you don't believe in God. That will get you cut off with a quickness. And they know this. And you got to have a job. You got to be working. You got to be in school, or you got to have a job. One of the two, you know. And for people who have fallen by the wayside, who can't do that, they can't go into higher education. They can't even finish their primary goddamn education because of the way the system is set up. They have a hard time finding unemployment. The only thing out there is the fucking military. And then they come out of the military and they're homeless. So, you know, those people
and brutalized. Have kind of given up. Don't forget brutalized.
Oh, yeah, brutalized. But, you know, those people have kind of given up. And the thing about it is, even the black community isn't giving them a whole lot of, you know, fucking play, which is fucked up. So now we've gotten into this argument over how fucked up Bernie Sanders is. And like I said, if I had time here, I could go into.
Well, I mean, you got time, but I mean, I'm having a hard time seeing that he is. He's got a different position on firearms than I do. But then again, he's more in line with the mainstream electorate of West Virginia on firearms than I am, and I live here. Okay, yeah. I mean, I at least understand it. Let me go to something Carol just wrote to me, and get your take. She says, "What's the end game by going after the most vocal socialist? Do they think they're getting something better from the GOP?" Bernie doesn't care what color you are. He wants free college for all, not the rich, not the white, ever in body.
Well, like I said, that's what he's saying, and I hope he sticks by it. But when I asked some of these folks, you know, well, if you're not going to trust Bernie Sanders because you really hate him because he doesn't give a fuck about black people, la 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 la, then what are you going to do when the election rolls?
But where did that even come from, Angry? Is it because he comes from a mostly white state that therefore he doesn't care about black folks?
Well, like I said, it would take time, but you know, I'll try to do it real fast.
I come from a place that has no Vietnamese in it. Does that mean I don't like Vietnamese people?
There are people who think like that. And again, you have to understand something. You're talking about a community right now that is on edge. We have our people being murdered out here. This recent thing that just went down in Ferguson, you have motherfucking white guys running, you know, the Oath Keepers running around.
Oh, that's, yeah, and as far as I'm concerned, that's the damn Klan. And the idea, yeah, and the idea that the police chief in Ferguson is so powerless that all he can do is say, "Well, they're not helpful and they're unwelcome." You know, you're the goddamn police. You've got the guns. You've got the armored personnel carriers. You've got the snipers. You didn't have any problem a year ago having those snipers pointing their rifles at unarmed people in black people in the streets. How about you swivel that damn mount around and point it at one of these lard-assed, pussle-gutted white people and say, "Leave."
But this is what we saw, and I know somebody's going to fucking say something about this. And no, Germany is not the only example where this has happened. I can talk about Egypt like this, too. But we got to fucking face facts. When you have paramilitary organizations, which is what the Oath Keepers are, why they're allowed to do this, I don't know. But we can assume. Okay, when you have a paramilitary organization that shows up to a fucking event a year after the federal government released a report and said that the violence that came down in Ferguson was the responsibility of the police and the other federal agencies that were there, as you just said, waving guns in people's faces at a civilian fucking protest against police brutality, racist police brutality. Here you have a year later, a paramilitary organization standing and chatting and sharing coffee with uniformed fucking police officers in Ferguson, Missouri, on U.S. goddamn soil. You know, how many different ways they're going to violate posse comitatus?
All right, let's take a look at that real quick and analyze it in terms of the Second Amendment. You know, you've got a well-regulated militia being necessary to the preservation of a free state. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So are they saying they're a well-regulated militia? The very definition of a militia is that it operates under the official aegis of some political entity, okay? And a whole bunch of white guys with guns is not a political entity unless we're just going to devolve right down to Chairman Mao and political power flows from the muzzle of a gun. Because if that's where we are in 2015, Angry, I think we damned well sure ought to make sure that we start saying that. If that's the case, well, it's time for the Black Lives Matter movement to get some damn guns.
Well, see, that's a problem too, because there's a lot of folks that are talking like that, and you have a few people who have had military experience, and you know they're going to get gun licenses. And this isn't necessarily a good thing, because again, if you don't know why you're there, but you're showing up to fight, but you don't really know why the fuck you're fighting and what it is you're trying to achieve and what you want afterwards, that's a problem. Because once you end up with complete anarchy.
Well, I mean, and that's not the argument that I'm making.
No, that's not the argument that you're making.
What I'm suggesting is that the well-regulated militia language, granted, Uncle Nino Scalia says that's just precatory language, and that the real meat of it is that everybody gets to have a gun. But still,
or rocket launcher, he claimed.
Yeah, I know. But that's what where I want to go, and I want to do this kind of carefully because I don't want to be misunderstood. If that's just precatory language, and if in fact the well-regulated militia of this era is actually the National Guard, and there doesn't seem to be any particular argument on that, then the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right, is it not?
As far as I understand.
Okay. If it's an individual right, then it is not a collective right unless you're a part of that well-regulated militia, which we know to be the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
So in a place like Missouri, Stan, the reason that they're not – because, see, I think – I'm guessing here. But I think – if you showed up in Massachusetts or New York, like the Oath Keepers have done in Ferguson, the cops probably would not hesitate to say, go the home, okay? Because it constitutes, I mean, you could argue it's incitement to riot. You could argue that it is a threat to public safety because there's no guarantee that any of these yahoos have the first idea of how to deploy a weapon. I mean, one of them in Ohio, Lancaster to be exact, already proved he doesn't because he freedom protected the concrete sidewalk in front of the recruiting station.
Yeah.
What I suspect is in the mind of law enforcement here, even if and I'm going to assume that I'm gonna assume a little bit of goodwill here. They don't feel like they've got the power to tell these fuckers to get off the street, because they're afraid that they'll run afoul of some NRA-sponsored open carry law. But the argument that I'm putting forward here, Angry, is that open carry is an individual right, to the extent that it's a right, and I don't think it is. Open carry is an individual right, and it does not convey the right to gather in gunned-up groups of vigilantes. Okay.
No, it doesn't, Bob. And of course, you're totally fucking right. But here's what they do. They pull, again, when you can't win an argument logically, you go to the rational. We are defending the Constitution, and I have a constitutional right. That is a religion here. Whether or not people actually believe it.
But see, that's crap. That's crap, Angry, because
of course
the means of defending the Constitution is spelled out in the Constitution. If they're defending the Constitution, then they are, by definition, under the authority of the President of the United States. And you know, none of those pasty-faced, doughy, lard-ass white people are going to disperse if that, you know, that one in our White House tells them to.
No.
Once we've been through this analysis, then do we not understand that these are, in fact, insurgents? Okay? They are anti-American insurgents and must be described as such.
Of course. But now which is, we're both on the same page with this. The only thing that I'm saying is, if they went to New York City, for example, which has a police force that, where the chief brags about having basically the fourth largest army in the fucking world, where they are complete control freaks, where people are being held past their goddamn release dates, being held for years without fucking charge. Okay? Do you really think they're going to let a bunch of fucking yahoos come in there and wave their bullshit around? No. But when you look at the middle of the country, where you have the Confederate flag, and where you have the Bible, and where you have Jim Beam, and where they figure, hey, you know, the Klan, well, their only problem was they didn't do enough. They should have been more like the Black Legion, right? When you have that type of extremism, and you look at the police records themselves, you can go to the police websites themselves, because I do, and read what they actually have to say. You have Michael A. Wood Jr. on Twitter, who is blowing the lid off all of this. Retired police officer talking about what the hell is going on. It's not a matter of they can't do anything about them. It's a matter of they don't want to do anything about them. And they tell the press that we can't do anything about them.
Because I think there may be an element of that. But I can't help noting that all these places where people are walking around with all these guns, all these white folks, it just happens to be places where the NRA has worked hardest to make guns ubiquitous in daily life. And I'm not getting out my tattered purple velvet robe with the frayed appliqué moon and stars and the glow in the dark language that says "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby" on it or anything, but if you extrapolate this outward or backward, even if you try to set yourself up maybe 150 years out and look backwards, what you can see is that the legislative efforts of the National Rifle Association have actually been the sort of legislative efforts that resemble nothing so much as the Third Reich's enabling law. Okay, this is a legislative campaign to take apart constitutional government in the United States by a means allegedly constitutional.
Okay, now let's go to the brown shirts again. Oh, well, not again. Let's go to the brown shirts, because the brown shirts are the oath keepers. They put the German police, the imperial police, watch them chop up communists, anarchists, right? The Seventh-day Adventists, but whatever the religious group was, the Jehovah's Witnesses.
The Anabaptists.
They watched them beat them down and cut them up in the street. They watched people being lynched. And there was like almost 400 fascists that were taken to trial for violence. Only three were successfully prosecuted, and they had like short, you know, terms, right? The leftists, on the other hand, who were fighting the fascists, fighting the brown shirts, they went to prison, and many of them were executed. This was before the Nazis came in, because people do not understand. The Enabling Act and everything else, his election in 1933, it was all legal. But the point is, when you have uniformed police officers that are going to stand around and point guns at citizens while you have paramilitary standing right next to them, and they're not concerned about them, after John Hauser just shot up a movie theater, after Gerard and Amanda Miller did what they did, after Clive and Bundy and his sons and all their paid farmhands pulled out on federal officers, and you're going to tell me that nobody's doing anything about this? It's because they don't want to do anything about it. You have a police union chief. You have two. One in New York who says that they are at war with the black community. You have another one. I forgot what state he's in, but he's in the Midwest. And he said that he wrote from the heart that we need the citizens to help us keep the Black Lives Matter people down, because they're going to come in and they're going to take over our community and they're going to riot and stall all of this. And like I said, this is after two federal reports said that the Ferguson and Baltimore riots were caused by the police. But this is a police union head who is saying that we need the public to take the side of the police. So when I see the Oath Keepers wearing, you know, body armor and walking around with field-grade military hardware, and the police are standing there having coffee with them, yeah, Bob, there's a problem. You have fascism in your country, and you just don't want to admit it. And that usually happens when empires are on the fucking way down. That's the same thing that happened in Germany. When they got hit with the Versailles Treaty, it fucked them up so much, they hated the whole goddamn world. And that's what Hitler needed. And Trump is getting the same sort of fucking support. This is how we can tie this all in.
See, white everybody keeps saying, here, oh, Trump will never be president. Trump will never be president.
Oh, shit. Yeah, well, you know, it can happen. That motherfucker is out here speaking what the average white person, and I'm including a lot of progressives, do not have the balls to come right out and say. So they're letting Trump do this. And, you know, Piyush Jindal is trying to ride that fucking wave, right? He's not white, but he's trying to ride that fucking wave. Ted Cruz is not white. He's not even born in this fucking country. But he's trying to ride this fucking wave, too. You know, and every other black goddamn Republican out there, you should be fucking ashamed of yourself.
I got a campaign slogan for you. Trump, yeah. Haley, 16.
That's possible. That's possible. That's possible. Because the first thing that the GOP is going to do and say, hey, look, we got a Negro. Oh, she's really from India. Okay, we got a South Asian. Oh, she was actually born here?
No, that's okay. Yeah. They've used that word to describe people from India too. So,
oh, macaca, right? That was.
Well, no, I was thinking back to a dispatch from a British commander in the First World War, getting ready to take some Indian sepoys over against some Africans led by a German commander, and the communique from the British commander was, well, I don't think that word. We'll have much trouble killing there, that word.
Yeah.
I mean, it's historically there.
Yeah, so it's like you said, it's been there. So, again, when you have people who think that they're losing everything and you have cops that are, you know, out here on Facebook and Twitter talking about how racist they are and not feeling that they should be held accountable for this shit. How many cops have lost their fucking jobs recently just because of what they're saying online? But, you know, for example, in New York, though, you can go online. There was a West Indian Day parade, and there was a slew of racist shit from the police officers there. Nobody lost their jobs. Nobody lost their jobs.
Oh,
you have all these cops that are doing this. Nobody's, you know, they lose their job, and then they move to another county and find work again.
Well, hell, right? That's what happened with that county clerk in Ferguson.
Yeah, well, okay, let's go back to
Ferguson. She's got a new gig, and I'm sure she's out there emailing new Obama is a email.
Yeah, but what did Anonymous find out? You know how Anonymous is. They go after the authorities, right? So they got into the computers of the Ferguson Police Department and found out that Frank Okona, who is the head of the Klan down there, was using their computers. Now, when the Oath Keepers were down there a year ago, when the feds found out about it, the feds got rid of them. But this is local police. There's no oversight from the outside. You dig? They're arresting reporters for doing their goddamn jobs. They're arresting, you know, peaceful, unarmed protesters for doing their jobs. While they have motherfucker who was not, as you put earlier, who was not licensed and is not working under the pleasure of the fucking president, waving guns around there like they're policing when they're not fucking police. And the police are letting them do this. And when you see that, the public has to fucking worry. At least the particular public that has to worry about these motherfuckers.
No, when you let armed vigilantes run around this country with impunity, that's called a breakdown of order. Okay?
Well, it's not a breakdown of order if the order wants it to happen.
Yeah, but see, the problem is if the it still is, because even the maker of the golem, once the golem gets out of control, you know, they're on the menu too.
Until they can get the paper from under the tongue, yeah. You know, but that's the battle, right? Because once you've let this out, now you got to stop the golem. You have to open his mouth and pull the prayer out from underneath his tongue. Only one person can do that, the rabbi, the person who actually started that shit. So that means that white racism to this level, to this paramilitary level in the United States has gotten to this point. That means white people need to get off their fucking ass and start saying that this shit is wrong.
Well, yeah, but you know what? I'm gonna go a little bit different. Angry. We're running out of time. We always seem to.
Always do.
But I'm gonna say this much. It is time for the President of the United States to declare these damn militias, these oath keepers, these vigilantes, armed vigilantes on our streets. It's time for him to declare them persona non grata and go ahead. You know what? Federalize the National Guard in Missouri and sweep those bastards off the streets.
But hey, you just talked about Israel. They realized that the grandson of Maya Kahana, who was behind the burning of that baby, his grandfather was the number one fucking fascist in Israel. He was assassinated in the States. But Maya Kahana's grandson was leading the fucking settlers out there. This shit is all coming back full circle. Israel has realized they got to start calling them what the fuck they are, terrorists. The Obama administration has to start calling the right wing that is running around here in paramilitary fucking, you know, garb what they are, fucking terrorists, domestic fucking terrorists.
And it does not. And it does not help. It does not help that an advisor to the president just got popped last night or night before last, maybe, for squeezing off a round at her cheating boyfriend.
We're in so much trouble, Brother Bob. It's not funny.
No, I mean, but like I've said before, they do not put up blinking lights, empire collapsing, everything half price. No, but this is what it damned well looks like. And I wish to God there were more people in this country who understood that. But hell, we don't know our own history, let alone anybody else's. So screw it. The condemned ate heartily, right?
Well, alarm bells are ringing. You know, if people are not hearing us, because they're in denial.
And you know what? I'll be honest with you. Like I said, running out of time. I got one last question for you to ponder. What if the reason the Obama administration, and God, I feel like I ought to be using my Alex Jones voice. What if the reason the Obama administration isn't federalizing, nationalizing the National Guard in Missouri and sending them to sweep the streets of these damned insurgents? What if the reason for that is because they aren't sure that the National Guard would actually follow orders instead of going over to the Oath Keepers' side? Because remember, Oath Keepers is something you sign up for while you're in the military. That's where they recruit. How many signatories to the Oath Keepers' oath are there in the Missouri National Guard?
Hey, remember the cat that shot up the Sikh temple?
Oh yeah, up in Wisconsin.
He was in psych ops for the United States Army. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we got to go, brother.
Yeah, hey, if you guys can help Brother Bob get the equipment that he needs, you've been hearing about it on the Mike Malloy Show. You know, come on, cough up some coins and help this man out. Peace.
Thanks, Angry. And it is time to get out of here. Thanks, one and all. And thanks to Mark. Thank you very kindly, Mark. Mark went ahead and moved on what Cindy did, helping take care of fundraising this evening. And Mark took care of tomorrow's fundraising and took us down to $1,800 to go in the equipment fund. And so that means tomorrow we'll actually start on Thursday's fundraising, which is just freaking awesome. And there is $181.33 to go on Thursday's fundraising. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Cindy. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, one and all. And thank you, all of you, for the time you spend sharing in this little program. And thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that prevents pregnancy. It is not an abortion pill and does not cause an abortion, only the prevention of pregnancy. If you have had unprotected sex or have been raped and need Plan B, contact your local Indian Health Service. You have a legal right to receive Plan B over the counter. meaning without a prescription or a doctor's appointment if you are 17 or older. Plan B must be taken within 72 hours of sexual intercourse to be effective. For more information, call 605-487-7072. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
This is Hayley Mills. We're all familiar with the issues. We all know that we should speak out, that we should take some responsibility for the disastrous decisions and actions made and taken in our name by the leaders of the United States of America and the United Kingdom. Ask your Congress member for the appropriate investigation into the activities of the current administration. Thank you.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson County, Kansas. Your one true voice in Kansas. This is the Radio Free Kansas.
I'm your host, Mike Cadell, broadcasting from North Jefferson County, Kansas, smack dab between Kansas City, Topeka, Lawrence, Atchison. Easiest way to describe it. Put together quite a good show. Think you're going to like it.
Radio Free Kansas on blogtalkradio.com/HideInCopfire.
American free, jump on board the super patriot, American free, yeah. Hi, this is Annie from Avoir Simone. You're listening to a Creative Commons licensed podcast.
I'm Dick Gregory with PETA. Martin Luther King Jr. taught me the fight against oppression is never an easy one. It's even harder if you have no voice. For animals held captive in circuses, life consists of cramped cages, shackles, and daily beatings. There is no escape. They cannot demand their freedom. Images like these bring only one word to my mind, slavery. Be an abolitionist for the animals. Please don't go to circuses. For more information, contact PETA.
757-622-PETA.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
And we'll talk about they don't hate anyone and they don't wish to see people maybe being killed. They say those things publicly because it sounds good for the camera. But when the cameras are shut off, members of organized white supremacist groups do sit around plotting to kill people, talk about assassinating people and blowing up buildings.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Ted. Actually, whether a candidate has overt misogynistic tendencies rather is important within the political process, because a president does, after all, have to be president of all the people, not just the ones with penises. Yeah. Yeah, there's more. I'm going to leave that alone. Well, it's not often we get two nights in a row with the Angry Indian. Hey, Angry. Uh-oh. Well, we're trying to connect to the Angry Indian. Are you there, Angry?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I just wanted to say something quick, man. Ted Nugent is a fucking pig. He's a pig.
Well, is there a debate?
Yeah, obviously there's a debate because people still give this fucker airtime. He still shows up at these NRA rallies. They still have him on Fox.
Well, hell, he's an NRA officer, isn't he?
I don't know. He might be. He might as well fucking be.
I'm pretty
Tom
sure
Selleck
he is.
Is
right? I'm pretty sure he's an exalted because they open up when Charlton Heston went down to be basted for all eternity in hell.
Hmm. Yeah, remember how that went when they insisted on having that rally after that tragedy. Yeah, well, look, we've talked about this. We're not going to go into it, but we've talked about this before. You know, racism, when it gets to that extreme, when you're looking at, the far right in their glory, they don't like white women any more than they like any other minority. All right. So Megyn Kelly is used to it. She's like Sarah Palin. She's used to being slapped around verbally, maybe even physically by these guys.
Because after all, they all subscribe to a rigid religion that says women are to submit themselves to men. And you know that's not a Christianity problem. That's a monotheism problem. That's a Muslim problem. It's a Judaism problem. I mean, don't Orthodox Jews get up every morning and pray, thank God I was not born a woman?
That's one of them, yeah. That's one of them. You know, it's accepted, right? So if you're going to really pump this whole Bible thing and include stoning children at the gates of the city and chopping off a woman's hand if her husband is wrestling with another man and she grabs the family jewels of the other guy to defend her husband, we'll chop off her hand and show no mercy, right? So, you know, I mean, if they really want to go this far, how are they any goddamn different than the Islamic State, Daesh, ISIL, whatever the fuck you want to call them?
My point exactly. I think if you sat them down to toast and tea, they'd probably find out they have more in common than they have separating them, and then we'd really be screwed.
Well, we are already screwed, because when Al-Qaeda was called Al-Qaeda here in the press, if you go around, Google it, whatever search engine you use, you'll find out that the FBI had at least three major cases where they caught Klansmen and other white supremacists, you know, members of the Patriot Party and what have you, the militias, like the Hutari group, you know, bullshit like that, that they were trying to hook up with Al-Qaeda. so that they could basically rep Al-Qaeda in the U.S. So, you know, this is not a secret. And if you look at a lot of those websites, they don't really have a problem with the extremists. And if you want to go even deeper and look at the European press, especially between 1984 and like 2008, and I'm kind of throwing those years out, but that's when I became aware of it, that French neo-Nazis were going to Islamic terrorist training centers in North Africa, right, to get trained because they both don't like Jews. So they both are fighting against the state of Israel. So they say, okay, well, we can drop our bullshit for a while because really we didn't really fuck with you during the war. You were kind of helping us out, right? So, you know, we both don't like Jews. So, you know, why don't we get together and we go both go after these motherfuckers. We'll train together. We'll do a couple operations together. The European intelligence circles understand this. Americans don't understand this, you know, or don't want to. And when you start looking at Ted Nugent and what we were talking about with the Oath Keepers showing up and the police not doing anything to them, but they're arresting and intimidating, you know, these protesters with Black Lives Matter. And, you know, I would think Bernie Sanders would be against that. But, you know, anyway, the fact that he's being allowed to do that and they were allowed to do that. Somebody's making a move here, be it the Koch brothers. You know, we've had a couple of really, you know, serious, you know, attempts here with fascism a few times. So why would this be any different? You know, why would this be any different?
Right. Yeah. And by the way, Carol and Jack and a couple of others let me know. Yeah. Ted Nugent is on the board of directors of the NRA.
He's on the board of directors. So, yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, doesn't that just speak volumes for them?
Well, it's volumes of hypocrisy. You know, I'm going to say this because my fucking father went in as a black man, went into the fucking United States goddamn Navy and was treated badly the entire fucking time he was in there. And I'm going to say something else because he tried twice to get into the fucking UDT, what is now the SEAL teams. He was an excellent motherfucking swimmer. They wouldn't let him fucking do it. They did everything possible on his goddamn exams to keep him from going in. Now, I did have someone that, you know, that fucking supposedly did get in. But, you know, but this is a lot of bullshit. That motherfucker never served. He goddamn admitted that he didn't bathe for a week, that he didn't wipe his fucking ass for a week, that he didn't brush his fucking teeth for a week. He threw up on himself, stuck his finger down his goddamn throat, went in there dirty so that they would think he was insane and make him fucking 4F. Fuck him. I still got my goddamn selective service card in my motherfucking wallet. They fucking called me, even though I don't agree with this goddamn shit. I might have been an objective fucking, you know, observer, but I would have goddamn went. Fuck him. Ted Nugent is a fucking punk. And I'm saying that because he runs around talking all this macho shit. He's a hunter. He sells jerky. He runs around with a lot of weapons. He does set a terrible guy, even though Megyn Kelly is a fool. To say what he fucking said about her while he's loading his magazines, that is the most sexist goddamn shit I've ever fucking heard. I have a goddamn wife, man. I don't want anybody fucking running around and thinks like that. Fuck Ted Nugent. He's a fucking freak.
And that's the whole point. I mean, whether it's Trump saying that he would gladly, you know, punch out a black woman, or Ted Nugent saying that he likes to masturbate to Megyn Kelly, you. And, you know, it's kind of your job. You're outraged. You're insulted. You're pissed right the hell off. But where's the statement from Rents Priebus, chairman of the GOP? And like I said earlier, where's Megyn Kelly saying, well, I guess we've learned all about Trump we need to know. He says he'd like to punch some black women in the face.
Hey, you know, I can talk a whole lot of shit. Where's Barbara Walters saying, wait a motherfucking minute. This is bullshit. There's a ton of women in broadcasting, regardless if they support the GOP or not, that should be like, wait a fucking minute. We let Trump get away with saying that, you know, if you ask me a tough question, you must be on the fucking rag. Right? So now, if these two fucking, you know, black broads show up and try to take the mic from me, it's going to get motherfucking violent. Now, see, if a black man said that shit, he'd be in fucking trouble. And I know somebody's justifying what Trump is saying because of the way fucking Kanye West acted like a fucking fool. Well, what was it, Taylor Swift, whoever the fuck she was?
No, please.
Hey, there's white people that are still mad with the entire black community about that. Oh, look at what he did. He
Hold on, time. Wait a minute. The entire black community is now responsible for Kanye West?
The entire black community is responsible for Tupac Shakur. The entire black community is responsible for Biggie Smalls. The entire fucking black community is responsible for Ice-T when he put out Cop Killer. Fuck yeah.
Lindbergh baby, anyone?
Well, hey, you know, that was what? I mean, how many Germans got stomped on the East Coast because of that? And most of the Midwest because of that, right? We're living in a time of freakouts. It's just like when the Pujadas, Pierre Pujad, you know, those motherfuckers are running around in France. You know, they wanted to get rid of McDonald's and they wanted to get all of the American stuff out. You know, he was marketed as a populist, but he was a fucking fascist. And they were talking about, you know, kids were missing because, you know, Jews were collecting, you know, they were killing young French girls who were purely white and purely French. They had the blood of Joan of Arc, so they had to get their blood to make Passover bread. And you know, people were buying this bullshit up until the mid-goddamn 80s, even though nobody's missing. And then you remember in the 80s in this country, you had the fucking satanic panic. Nothing happened. Nothing was going on. I mean, there were some freaks that were using Satanism, you know, for like psychodrama or some shit. But they made it sound that, or made it out that there was this big goddamn conspiracy going on that had police involved and federal, you know, people involved. And it turned out to be a goddamn nothing. Because the moral majority here, led by Jerry Falwell, and thank, you know, whatever powers there are in the universe, that he is not here any goddamn more. That motherfucker started the satanic panic.
No. Jerry Falwell and Oral Roberts are down in hell sodomizing each other.
Well, I don't know. I'm native. It's hard to really fuck with Oral Roberts, even though I remember that. How much was it that he needed, or Satan was going to come get him?
Oh, no. God was going to call him home. Satan wasn't going to take him. God was. God loved him.
Yeah, but the story I got was that his wife had taken their family Bible and in the living room and beat Satan off of him, who was choking the life out of him.
Well, she may have thought she was beating Satan off, but I think it might have been just, you know, some rent boy.
Well, hey, he got more than twice what he asked for, and a lot of that was Indian money.
But I mean,
some of it my mama's money.
But I mean, it's like what Bishop Bryant said there. You know, there are conversations that white allies need to be having with other white people. And it ain't an easy thing to do, but once you've done it once, doing it the second time becomes easier. But don't we need to be careful, Angry, when we say that, you know, white people, you know, generally are mad at Kanye? I mean, don't we play into the same problem when we do that?
Well, yeah and no. But like, again, I'm being general, but I'm being general with intelligence. You know, I'm generalizing with intelligence. The people who are still upset and, you know, have this idea that if you give a black guy 5 cents more than a white man is getting, yeah, they're still mad with Kanye West because that's something that they can focus on. It's not that it means any fucking thing. It's something to focus on. You still have people who are complaining about the film White Chicks, which I've never seen, where they like did the reverse of blackface. But the point is, if you're 20 some odd years old or 17, you don't remember blackface and what that means. You don't, because they don't teach about it in school unless you're at the college level. So you don't understand what the reverse of that was supposed to be. Now, the film looks stupid to me in the general. But there are white people who will cite that as, you know, the white genocide. This is hate on white people. And there are people, well, matter of fact, I think I sent you the information on this. The Daily Stormer, dailystormer.com, is one of the neo-Nazi sites that I suggest to people keep an eye on. They have officially endorsed Donald Trump for president. It's right on their website.
Oh,
and
no.
I sent them through their Twitter account. Have you denounced this yet? Have you rescinded this, you know, this endorsement? They have not. Because he represents the white genocide. The white women are trying to take away the balls of white men. They don't want them to have guns. They don't want to give them sex when they want it, right? You know, they want them to, you know, do half of the household chores. They don't want to have to deal with this shit. And then you got the blacks coming. Then you got the Mexicans.
Oh, wait. We're going to go down the castrating women road?
Look at the men's
movement. Yeah, I guess that's still out there, too.
The men's movement, you know, people are like, I'm surprised you don't support the men's movement. I'm like, what are you defining as the men's movement? And then they'll point a website out to me or two, and I'm like, look, man, really read this shit. Forget about the fact that you're having problems with your ex right now, you know, and look at the fact that these guys are not motherfucking talking about fairness. You know, they're talking about, well, men should basically be on motherfucking top. And the fact that we're not, you know, able to do what the fuck we want to do with our question, then that means that God isn't where it should be in society, and the crime is out of place because the fathers are not in the home because they're pushing us out, you know, because he has a personal fucking problem. So he makes it out to be a major fucking problem and starts pulling in other fucking people. The Nazis, the Klan do it all the time. They tell Christians every fucking day of the week, I represent you. We are a Christian organization. We're a terrorist organization, but we're a Christian organization, right? And we represent all white people. And when white people do not say, and you said this early in the show, and we have both said this, and we've heard Malloy say this, and Bill Press say this, and a bunch of other people say this. If people are sitting around and talking about racist nonsense, vileless nonsense, and you sit there and don't say any goddamn thing, you're part of the fucking problem. Now, you might lose your job because I have. You might lose your friends because I have. Okay, you might not be invited to a lot of motherfucking parties, and that's, you know, kind of where the fuck I'm at. You know, my social circle has gotten down. But the point is, you have to tell people, look, man, why did you have to say that? Well, you know, he's a chink, man. I didn't mean anything by it. Just say, I don't like that. Well, you're not Chinese. That's not the point. You know, if somebody said, nigga, you'd be mad. Oh, that's different. Why? Because it's us? You know, come on.
Yeah.
I do it with Native people, too. You know, it's like, what's going on here with this? And it's not that I'm kissing white ass. It's just like, wait a motherfucking minute. If we don't learn to have respect for each other objectively, then this shit isn't going to motherfucking work. It's not going to goddamn work. And that's when the violence fucking comes, because people get frustrated because they're not being fucking heard. Now, yeah, we can make a lot of arguments on whether or not they should have done the action the way they did. And I'm not against it per se. I'm just saying, if you're going to do that, go to the GOP that says that we're not racist.
Well, you raise an important issue there, Angry, because I got something sitting here in my little stack of stories. Did you happen to catch? Because it's a question we've all asked a number of times. Did you happen to catch the story about what happened when? Black Lives Matter went to a Clinton event up in Boston?
No.
It starts with this story came from Common Dreams. It starts with a report in the New Republic, who apparently were given some sort of exclusive access to what was going to happen. I know.
If it wasn't a conservative left paper, then I wouldn't, you know, but it's
well, so Black Lives Matter activists headed off to a Hillary Clinton campaign stop in Keene, New Hampshire. Left from, I guess, Boston or something. Five of them, including Black Lives Matter Boston founder Dinesha Yancey. They got there and said, we're Black Lives Matter. We want in there. And they said, and security said, well, good for you. The overflow room is over here. You can't come in. And so they quietly and politely walked to the overflow room, where they sat and watched Senator Clinton give some sort of a speech in Keene, New Hampshire. And then afterwards, it was reported that they were given 15 minutes with Dr. Secretary Senator Clinton, at which point they declared victory. But does that not give you, I mean, does that not tell you a little something?
Yeah, that raises a lot of questions if that's true. You know, because one, I would like to know why the New Republic got this exclusive, being who they are. Being the, you know, the history being what it is,
and apparently when they did get their meeting with her, according to the activists, let's see, the New Republic says, asked whether Clinton actually proposed policies in the meeting, Jones said, not that I recall, no. In fact, I know that she didn't, because she was projecting that what the Black Lives Matter movement needs to do is X, Y, and Z. to which we pushed back to say that it is not her place to tell the Black Lives Matter movement or black people what to do, and the real work doesn't lie in the victim blaming that implies. And that was a rift in the conversation. Jones said that the meeting concluded without any aggression and that the meeting was respectful. Where was the respectfulness for Bernie Sanders? Not once, but twice.
Yeah, see, you know, you have to ask. Well, see, first off, I'm not aware of this. You know, people are not, you know, we're not talking about any of that at all. And it was just about, you know, them. And I was wondering, you know, did they go anyplace else?
Yeah, I love the fact that apparently she did a little white-splaining.
Well, see, yeah, that's troublesome because, you know, if they got to sit down with Clinton, then what are they trying to say, that they were able to get a sit down with Clinton so they didn't get one with the Sanders campaign and this is why they did what they did?
No, I don't think that claim is being made because, frankly, I'm guessing here, but I'm thinking the Sanders campaign would probably gladly sit down.
Well, maybe not. Well, at this point, they probably would simply because they have to, because they've been pushed into a corner. But what I'm trying to say is it looks bad, and it's not so much that it looks bad. It's that this is not how you do things. You don't give your opposition, you know, ammunition to use against you, because this can be twisted, and it is being twisted a million different ways. And now Trump will be justified in the minds of a lot of people who are already paranoid, who are already hateful, who already didn't want to hear anything about Black Lives Matter because they don't give a fuck about Black lives. They can now, you know, point to this and say, oh, well, look at the arrogance of these motherfuckers, especially when two black women do this, because the angry black woman, you know, syndrome, right? You know, that appellation, you know, that's going to come up. It's already there.
Well, what's interesting, because they created, I mean, this is a heck of an interesting story that isn't getting a hell of a lot of coverage. They created a hashtag, angry, hashtag haul up Hillary, H-O-L-L-U-P Hillary. And they sent out a tweet that says, huge thanks to everyone tweeting about haul up Hillary action. We've gotten the attention of Hillary Clinton staff and they are working with us. Which immediately received the response, clarify what you mean by working with you all. How so?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And another person responded and said, funny, considering there are literally zero holla-up Hillary tweets before yours just now. Care to elaborate?
Yeah. See, who's she working for? This is what I want to know. What is the activist history? You know, I mean, somebody, you know, found some stuff online that she was a Sarah Palin supporter when she was in high school. And, you know, yeah, it's possible that your politics can change because supposedly her parents are very conservative. But you pointed out her religious stuff.
Oh, right? Yeah, crazy. I mean,
you know,
woo.
Bree Newsom was talking about God, too, which I really thought should have been left out of this when she took the Confederate flag down there in South Carolina. But, you know, I really want to know, what is the history of this chick as an activist? Where did she come from? Both her and her partner. Because a lot of this, you know, if what you're telling me is true, being reported out of the New Republic, you know, people need to fucking analyze this and ask questions. And this is exactly what the fuck I've been trying to get people to do. It's just like when Bush's nephew.
When was the last time the New Republic broke anything?
Never. I mean, not since the 60s. Not since goddamn Vietnam. I mean, even when the Pentagon Papers came out, they almost didn't want to write about it. You know? You almost didn't want to touch it. That's the conservative wing of the Democratic Party. And they haven't budged since the late 60s, you know, and they probably never will. But like I said, you know, here you got Bush's nephew. He went down to Mexico. I didn't even know that this was legal. He went down to Mexico and stumped for Bush, basically saying that the GOP is not racist. And, you know, when your family is up in the States working in the fields and shit, if they get a chance that they can, you know, shout for Bush for those that are able to vote. Look at me. I'm brown, you know, and hey, the GOP is out there for you.
Well, this
and, you know,
this story just gets more and more interesting. Again, it's over at Common Dreams. The whole breakdown is CNN had a report on it.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, and they said, but listen to this. I mean, this is. I mean, you could sit down and just play some real fun little mind games with yourself over this. Initially, the meeting between Clinton and the protesters was going to be covered by pooled members of the media. But Nick Merrill, a spokesman for Clinton's campaign, said the Black Lives Matter protesters asked for the event not to be recorded by the media once they were informed journalists would be let in. Members of the media were never in the room with Clinton and the protesters. A Clinton aide said the protesters asked those in the room to stop recording and photographing during the first moments of their meeting with Clinton. Because of that, the aide said, the campaign did not escort anyone else in after that. But Yancey cast doubt on the Clinton campaign's reason for journalists not being let in the event. We said we did not want to take a photo with her, Yancey said. The only thing that we were asked about was whether we wanted to include photos. When asked whether they were asked to allow members of the media in, Yancey said, nope, we were not asked that. The Black Lives Matter members filmed their meeting with Clinton, however, and plan to put the video out. So they were going to have exclusive control of their of whatever that meeting was, the ability to edit it to their own liking. And no offense, when that happens on our side, it's as icky as when it happens with the edited, dummied up, faked up, frauded up, rubed up, jimmied up Planned Parenthood videos.
Planned Parenthood, Acorn.
If you are trying to draw national attention to your movement, why don't you let the media in? And exactly. you know me angry. I'm not the the defense committee for the for-profit media.
No, you don't have to be. It's just analytical.
But if you've got multiple cameras in there, then you got multiple people reporting on it, and bang, you've got greater visibility.
Yeah. Well, but again, analytically, when you look at this, there's nothing progressive about that. The whole point of activism is to bring that light, that media attention in there.
Yeah.
And the fact that they did not do that and they want that kind of control sounds a lot like the Center for Medical Progress. Right? You know, in terms of Planned Parenthood, you know, Acorn, you know, the James O'Keefe. I mean, what is his history? When he broke into, what was it, Senator Mary Landrieu's office in Louisiana? Wasn't that him? James O'Keefe?
Yeah. Stone Cold busted.
Now, he was doing some Watergate type shit, right?
Yeah, he was busted for a felony, and he was allowed to plead out by a compliant prosecutor to a misdemeanor.
Yeah, but my point is, he looks like Alfred E. Newman. He's a young white guy, one of these young conservatives, and his whole point is to go out there and muck things up. That's why I'm saying, I mentioned Bush's nephew. They used him to fuck up the minds, you dig, of voting people, of brown people, you know, to confuse them. And that's what a lot of this is about. So when we talk about Asian provocateurs, you know, who is this person working for? Why would they not bring the media in there when that's the entire goal of the Black Lives Movement? People who are associated with that really need to be asking themselves some fucking questions. And, you know, I'm going to, you know, leave out with this and let you take some of the calls. And roll this around. Because, you know, in the 60s, on the March on Washington, a lot of people know this in the black community, but outside it, it's kind of, nobody really discusses this. You had what were called the Big Six. Ralph Abernathy, Martin Luther King, Andrew Young. Can't remember exactly who else was there. They met with the Kennedy brothers together and Vice President Johnson in the White House. Because the Byard Rustin, who got kicked out of the movement because he was a communist and because he was gay, right?
Right.
And Abe Philip Randolph, they are the two that actually got the March on Washington organized. They got that together. And they had planned to go to the airport and lay down there and just, you know, no planes were going to take off or land. They were going to take over the streets. They were going to intend to freeze the Capitol. So everybody knew this. Because they went to the government and said, yeah, this is what we plan to do. We're having a protest, and this is what they plan to do. Now, King was not involved in that. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference wasn't involved in that. So when they met with the Kennedy brothers, this is what supposedly was done. They said, look, we don't like what the hell you're trying to do. And King said, look, man, no, not King, Abernathy said, look, we're not in charge of that. We're not the ones that came up with that. It doesn't have anything to do with us. These are some radicals. It's not us. And then they said, okay, well, this is what's going to happen. We're going to give you $250,000. we're going to put you at the head of the movement. That's how King got invited and got to be a part of that. The Kennedys
assisted him. And there's a history here, because what Bruce Dixon said over at Black Agenda Report was that the whole Black Lives Matter thing with Martin O'Malley and Bernie at Netroots Nation was a big carnival act. It was a fraud.
Yeah,
because he said Hillary Clinton wasn't there, and that, you know, Netroots Nation, there's a lot of people there who are hustling, trying to get noticed by the Democratic donor class. And you know what? I think that I'm not going to argue with that assertion. I think it's true. So what he says is that by doing what they did at Netroots Nation, Black Lives Matter was basically putting on a show for the money, the people with the money, without running the risk of alienating the candidate with whom the people with the money have closest affinity.
That's right.
You know, cherchez l'argent, right? You know, follow the money. Cui bono, that's baby.
That's right. She wasn't there. And, you know, to try to ruin their ability and to cause a big disruption amongst the white liberals, who are already kind of, you know, not really honest with themselves about a lot of their privilege, you know, because they were the first ones to start yelling. And then a lot of people started talking and saying, well, you know what, maybe that guy has a point. You know, why are black people angry with me? You know, and until white people, and that's the discussion white folks need to have with each other. You know, we have privilege. When are we going to acknowledge that shit? But because that discussion isn't happening, and it's not really the responsibility of Black Lives Matter to do that. It's really the responsibility of white folks.
Sure it is.
You know, but motherfucking, you know, the timing, everything that you're telling me now, because I wasn't aware of a lot of this. But analytically, you have to look at that and assume that she's working for Clinton. You know, or, let's just say she might be working for a conservative interest that has an interest in seeing Clinton get a certain amount of black votes. Because remember, when she was running the first time, before the whole Crocodile Tears incident went down, Rupert Murdoch of Fox News
was
and his
her money.
Saudi partner gave her $10 million. That was a lot of money. We keep hearing about Sheldon Adelson with his $10 million, but people forgot that Rupert Murdoch did the same goddamn thing. But he did it with Clinton. And then when she fell out, then he went over to Romney. But that's not how it started out. The Clintons are Republicans. When Bill said that he was a pro-business candidate when he was running the first time, I took him at his motherfucking word. And I believed him even more when NAFTA and GATT were passed. People forget this. You know, people, you know, they realize that the memory of the public is fucking short. You know, just like when Hitler said, hey, who the fuck remembers the Armenian genocide? He looked around. They said, nope. He said, yeah, nobody gives a shit, so nobody would give a fuck about this either. And it's the same thing. You know, here we already have the textbooks have been changed because the Republicans are goddamn screaming. And you have Uncle Ben fucking Carson, who can't make up his mind what the fuck he wants to do. Another human fucking lawn jockey who says, if you read this, you'll want to join ISIS. He's already compared the founding fathers to ISIS. Fuck Ben Carson. He's a freak. He wants attention. That's like Piyush Jindal. They want attention.
I don't often say things and then say I'm hanging on to this and I'm using it again and again and again. But in Ben Carson's case, I'll make an exception. He is a politically and historically undereducated meat mechanic. He's very, very good, apparently, at cutting on people's brains. But apparently in order to become that good, you have to do so at the exclusion of every freaking thing else. No political science, no history, no anthropology, no psychology. No speech classes, no journalism, no.
No, but you see, the one thing that he's fucking expert at, other than working on people's brains, is navigating white society, because he didn't learn how to kiss ass.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, And I'm saying that because I know that's sometimes the only way I could get a fucking paycheck. You have to kiss ass. If you deal with a fucking cop, the majority of black people that are being wiped out by fucking police officers are being fucked up because they don't kiss ass. They're not kissing that guy's ass.
Yeah, they're not being sufficiently obsequious to power.
Yeah, so here's Donald Trump coming up with his racism.
That's just the step-off rule and the eyeball rule for 2015, isn't it?
Pretty much, that's what I'm saying. Donald Trump is ahead because he's saying, I'm white and I'm an American. You should be kissing my motherfucking ass. Period. And if you don't kiss my ass, we'll take your fucking oil. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he told American soldiers they had the right to take the women into a fucking country. You know,
let me ask you a quick question. I mean, you've done activism. I've done activism. When you know that somebody has said that you're not going to be welcome, and you're a real live, honest to God activist. Isn't that sort of like a red flag to you, kind of daring you to do it? I mean, we've seen it in Appalachia. So when Donald Trump says he wants to punch a woman from Black Lives Matter in the face, wouldn't you expect that they would show up at a Trump event?
Well, we'll see. I'll bet that there will not be any comeback from the Black Lives Matter movement to Trump or any other Republican. Because if they were going to, they would have done so already, if they really understood what the fuck was going on. That's why I started questioning the Bernie Sanders thing.
Well, the other thing that underpins this, and you know, I don't want us to wear out the topic, but I think it crosses lines into other areas that are really quite meaningful. You know, the two women in Seattle said, referred to the people there as white supremacist liberals.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Okay, and is there a race problem inside what is the so-called progressive movement? I think we both agree the answer is yes, because there is a race problem in every aspect of this country, cradle to grave, for over 400 years. This country is one great big race problem. I was talking on Facebook with my old buddy Joe Vecchio, who used to broadcast on the Horn, and he was talking about how the Southerners, you know, they're never good, blah blah blah, and you know, they need to be led to progressivism. You know, goddamn, the South had very progressive elements about it for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
The South voted FDR. I can show you a photograph of FDR in my hometown, where there were people hanging out of windows and standing on roofs just to get a glimpse of the man who had saved their white asses from starvation.
Yeah, that's the key word.
Right.
That's the key word.
And
they were progressive when it came to general shit that affected white people.
And race is the break point. And so having said that, the reason I say all of that is, sure, there's a race problem inside the progressive movement. But great googly moogly angry, isn't it minuscule as compared to the race problem inside the GOP, as compared to the race problem inside this country generally?
Well, see, yeah and no, and I'm being very serious about that. It's a big yeah and no, because even with a lot of progressives, it's almost like, okay, if you wear your hair naturally, you know, as an African person, it's kind of tolerated. Right? It's tolerated. And there are degrees of.
I'm a progressive. Who the f*** am I that I give a f*** about what anybody's hair looks like?
Because a lot of it comes down to what people personally are emotionally comfortable with. A lot of folks that come out of Indiana.
I'm a lot more scared of pasty-faced, doughy white men who shave their heads.
Well, again. Well,
I mean, I'm not yelling at you, Angry. You know that.
No. No, but what I'm trying to get to is, you know, racism itself, we have to again be clear with the language. Racism defines a system. Xenophobia, ethnic and racial and religious bias and prejudice is something else. You can have racism and not have racial hate. That's entirely possible. Megyn Kelly is a perfect example of that. You can have sexism and not necessarily, I don't hate women. I just think that they need to stay home. I think they need to be subservient, but I don't hate them. I would never beat up on them, right? We say that about gay people a lot, right? I don't hate gay people, but I don't think they should be beat up on, but I don't think they should have rights. It's the same sort of thing. You know, you have a lot of white folks that are okay with black people, provided they that they act white. That's why Obama was perfect.
You're basically making a larger reference to that scene between Gene Wilder and
Richard Pryor,
Cleavon Little in Blazing Saddles, where Gene Wilder looks at him and says, "Well, what did you expect? Welcome, Sonny. Marry my daughter." I mean, is that it? Is that where we are?
Well, it's always been that way, Bob.
Well, I know it's always been that way, but you're telling me, Angry, that we've made no goddamn progress whatsoever.
Well, you can go on YouTube and look at the different studies that have been done by universities when they speak to millennials about race. They're just as bad as their parents. They just don't act on it. They listen to the music. I mean, how many people were listening to, Little Richard, what have you, but would never allow their daughter to bring home a black fellow?
Oh, that was the entirety of the American South.
Yeah, so I mean, it's the same attitude was in the North, you know, Philadelphia, Chicago, New York City wasn't very much different. There was segregation, unofficial, in New York and Philadelphia and Newark, New Jersey, for decades, and the schools are still segregated. It's unofficial, but you go and you look at the numbers, you see what it is. It's the same thing I've been saying to you, to everybody else. If the average white person here in the majority wanted things to be different, things would be different. But in order for things to be different, you have to look at the society. It doesn't matter. You have to say, well, I personally did this. But you do have to say to yourself, I'm personally taking advantage of this, maybe not in cash, maybe not having a big house. Because that's where a lot of these, poor white folks are pissed, because they're like, well, I have to work too, and I don't have anything. Yeah, but you're not being shot in the street. You're not being denied jobs because you're white. You know, if somebody is prejudiced towards you, it's because they look at your economic status and say, no, that's a poor white person. You know, or they look at you.
They look at, listen, I think we all carry a little, I think we all carry our own kind of baggage. And I acknowledge mine. I judge people. I judge people every day. And my particular gig, my particular hang-up, isn't gender. It's not race, ethnicity, whatever we want to call it. It's intellect. I judge people based on whether or not they are stupid. And so, no, I think we all have to deal with racism. I think all males have to deal with issues of misogyny that are baked in.
Challenge men.
Yeah,
men, but stop talking to me. You know, they don't want to talk.
The cross I have to bear is stupidity. I can't stand it. It drives me nuts. I mean, I can stand and, you know, engage in idle banter. Yeah, nice weather we're having. Yeah, you betcha. I can do that, but the minute he says, and then there's that there Obama.
Yeah, but where is he getting his information? I mean, when
I know where he's. I live where I live. I know where he's getting his information. Fox News and church, and probably more of it from church than Fox News. Because church is an amplifier of Fox News inside the evangelical fundamentalist community.
And Fox News has totally dumbed down between them and George W. Bush. When he admitted to the European press that he was a perfect example of what a D-minus student could do in America. You know, he called himself bragging about being a failure in school but becoming president. I mean, he didn't tell him about his coke habits and his drinking and what have you. You know, but this is what he said. And then it got to be, I've said this to my wife, it's got to the point now where people accept the lowest common denominator for anything. They don't want to think about anything anymore. You know, you have, what was that? I told you before, there was a study in Oklahoma. Oklahoma, Brother Bob. Oklahoma. Where they asked them who the first president was, and they said Lincoln. That's a problem.
Well, and
that's a problem.
And see, I'll say this much, and I'm probably putting my own feet in the oil, even by saying this, angry. But what a lot of white folks. Well, here I am speaking for the race. Well, goodness me. A lot of white folks who consider themselves intelligent see culturally different behavior and assume that that in its own right is a mark of intelligence. Music being a big one. Or white folks complaining about fashion choices. Okay? You with me?
Yeah,
so,
I'm with you.
So a white person will see behavior that they think is ignorant being perpetrated by a person of color, and they'll write that all off to race. Whereas if they see a white person behaving stupidly, they have no problem saying, that guy's a goddamn fool. And that's what I mean when I say that issues of race are absolutely baked all the way in on the subatomic level of everything that happens in this country.
Well, not just this country. I mean, we have to look at it in
and
a broad
I mean, I know because I listened to Richard Pryor, that because he was, of course, speaking for the monolithic black community, that black folks look at white folks and say, white people. We generalize each other.
Well, I was going to say, you know, within the African community, right, you have, you know, shaved, you know, bigotry. So, you know, I'm lighter than
and
most
again,
people.
Because everything's...
That's the problem.
everything's a media reference to me. Yeah, Julian Bond and Garrett Morris, Saturday Night Live, back when it could be edgy and really challenge things, and that skit about black perspective, where Julian Bond is explaining to Garrett Morris the racial biases inherent in standardized testing. And it's all going real well until Julian Bond, who's very light, looks at Garrett Morris, who is very dark, and says, well, obviously, that's because, Garrett, light-skinned black people are much more intelligent than dark-skinned black people.
Mm-hmm.
And the skit is beautiful, and it's precious, and it's funny, and you could not get away with it in 2015 for nothing. Any more than the skit between Richard Pryor and Chevy Chase.
Yeah, but like
but
I was telling my
you know,
wife,
that was almost a more honest attempt at some sort of comedic and yet serious interchange of ideas than anything we can do.
Yeah, but you're talking at a time when Americans understood satire. Do you really think Laugh-In could do anything today?
Well, there's probably no market for it. Oddly enough, there's 160 channels and nothing on, but no market for it.
You know, I still watch reruns of that. You know, yeah. I mean, all of it is actually still relative. Vietnam, misogyny, racism, class division, homophobia. I mean, it's all in there. You know, I mean, they were dinged mostly for the anti-war message. You know, but again, you know, like I was telling my wife last night, Anwar Sadat, when he was still alive, I can't remember the American actor, black man, played him in a TV role here in the States. The Sadat government actually wrote, not government, but the his people wrote letters to the station saying, how dare you have a black man play Anwar Sadat? Anwar Sadat is Arab. Now, you know what the fuck Anwar Sadat looked like.
Anwar Sadat was an African, please.
But in Egypt, he wasn't black, you see? And that's Africa, you understand? You know, you have more rights than I do, but I have more rights than the average black guy did. What they call the quote-unquote sub-Saharan African because of the racism. Because of the racism. If you're Arab, if you're, you know, a mixture between an Arab or, and like European European, African maybe, you know, like the old Rhodesian type bullshit, you know, colored, as is usually said on the continent,
yeah.
You can get by a little bit. You can get by a little bit. Indians have a little bit more privilege, you know, but there's also
right,
a lot of hatred
because it is to the benefit of the white superstructure to create those degrees. I mean, the Spanish invented the whole idea of degrees of blood during the conquest of the New World,
yeah.
So that, you know, if you had, you know, one native ancestor, you were better off than somebody had two, and somebody who had two was better off than someone who had four, etc. And it gets applied into the black community with quatroons and octoroons and mulattoes and you know, the white people made a real study out of it because it worked to their advantage, because it keeps, I mean, if light-skinned black is the same as dark-skinned black and you're both being equally oppressed the same way, then the issue is with the oppressor. Our friends in the LGBTQ community can tell you the same thing. The bigotries and prejudices that exist in the trans community, beautiful post-op transsexuals are at the top of the ladder. Okay, post-op transsexuals are right below them. But any post-op transsexual is better than a pre-op transsexual. A transsexual is better than a transvestite. A transvestite is better than a cross-dresser. And, you know, it's all... I go back to the lessons I learned from Dr. Seuss. It's all sneetches. And I know that's a sweeping generalization from a really white guy. But damned if it doesn't seem like it's got some legitimacy to it.
Well, a butch versus femme. Marine Corps versus United States Army. You know, I mean, you have rivalries. And it's part of human nature to some degree. But, you know, and, you know, what the, I can't remember his name, he was the former president of Japan. He said that, and he was dinged for this, and he did apologize. But he was being factual. It really wasn't so much, it was a racist statement, but it wasn't done with malice. I mean, it wasn't done with xenophobia. He said that he felt that one of the reasons that the United States had the problems that it had was so many different minorities. They can't be one people. He wasn't necessarily wrong about that. But see, where the argument comes in, and where what a lot of young people of color in this country don't remember, because they haven't been taught. Most of our leaders have been assassinated. They've been imprisoned for life. Albert Woodfox is still sitting in a goddamn box, longest prisoner sitting in solitary in the world, 40 motherfucking years. He's still in there because the white racists that run the fucking prison system that refused to let him go, even though three courts have said that he should be released. He is a political prisoner, but that's being ignored. He's being ignored because he's a black man. Leonard Peltier sitting in prison because he's native. They will ignore him, right? And they have done what they could, Mumia Abu-Jamal, to get us to fight amongst each other. You know, to get, you know, Paul White, to get, you know, against
right,
minorities,
because,
to keep playing this stuff off.
If the political prisoner in the United States that you advocate for is Leonard, then, you know, you've got to squabble with somebody who thinks that Mumia needs to be out first. They all need to be out. But no, it's far
better.
Yeah,
but who really holds the strings?
Yeah,
white
right.
folks hold the strings
right.
in the masses.
And the power structure is who you need to be talking to, not squabbling. Oh dear God, I got a feeling I'm somehow or another in trouble. By the way, Marty and Ron and Raleigh both chimed in and said the Anwar Sadat film, that was Louis Gossett Jr.
Yeah. Yeah, I got the face, but I couldn't think
yeah,
of the name.
And you get fan mail. Jenny in Milwaukee says, I love Angry. And the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Dan, says, I'm so happy that Angry called back tonight because I found his conversation with you last night far too short. So we are getting to cover a little bit of extra ground. You mentioned those remarks about America has problems because we're so internally different. And of course, every 4th of July, there's some white guy or woman who will stand up and say, and, you know, our greatness is because we're a melting pot. On the other hand, though, if we talk about wanting universal health care or a social safety net that really takes care of everybody. What does the white wing holler right out of the gate? Well, you know, I mean, sure, Sweden and Norway and Germany and those countries, Denmark, sure, those countries can have social welfare states because, well, they're homogeneous, which is another way for, you know, that's your upscale Klansman saying they don't have Negroes. They don't have a native population. They don't have Asians. They don't have, in other words, they're saying, well, you know, if we were just white, everything would be fine. Which is essentially what America up to the civil rights era is. We'll do everything for white folks and next to nothing for people of color, natives, anybody else, and everything will be okay. I mean, I'm convinced that the whole reason the Republican Party wants to take apart Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment insurance, any of that, the whole reason for all of that angry is because this is becoming a darker nation. And the white folks in the grand old party, oh, we'll burn it to the damn ground before we'll see them get it. We didn't work for this.
Well, that's what they've been saying. But again, they've been saying that since Reconstruction. It really isn't new. The only thing that's new is they are a lot
more. Yeah, so when are we going to take them at their damn word?
Non-white people. Well, look, man, they're going to do what they're going to do. But again, we're not really analyzing a lot of these cases, and we really need to look internationally sometimes. For example, you know, people like Brigitte Bardot, you know, running around with Marie Le Pen and all the other Nazis in France. I mean, she's an animal lover, but she's also a neo-Nazi. So, you know, they don't want any more Arabs and Africans coming in. Well, one of the reasons that they were able to get any traction with that was because the social system, especially under Mitterrand, who was a socialist, really got stretched because they were, you know, allowing a lot of Africans in. France and Africa, Senegal especially, they have a history. But those men also have more than one wife. So they would bring over each wife and three or four kids they had with each wife, which he was able to maintain in Senegal. But now he's in France.
Right. So if all these anti-immigration white wingers want folks to stay home, why the hell can they not see that the best way to do that is to quit screwing up the home countries? I mean,
well, of course, but there's no profit in that.
Donald Trump wants to build a wall between us and Mexico. He doesn't want to build one between us and Canada, but, you know, to keep the Mexicans out. And of course, it's all, you know, to Donald Trump from the Rio Grande South, it's all Mexico. Never mind Peru, Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, whatever. It's all Mexico down there. But he wants, so he doesn't want him to come here. But by the same token, he can't seem to comprehend that we're the one that created the crisis.
Oh, he knows that. He doesn't give a fuck. He knows what he's doing. His people are getting visas to bring people over. There are ads in Mexican papers in the border towns for McDonald's, for chicken factories, you know, production factories, for sausage factories. They're shipping people in here by the busloads. They're not really trying to keep them out. He's just playing populist partisan politics. Really, because he doesn't really want to be goddamn president. The man has no political fucking experience. He has no legal fucking experience. He's just doing this, and he's just getting away with it. You know, I mean, we watched the other chicken guy out there in Texas, Ross Perot, do the same goddamn thing. He wasn't serious. He wasn't serious. His ideas were stupid. He just kept coming up with a whole bunch of Texas witticisms and, you know, some Kentucky vintage thrown in.
Yeah, there's going to be a giant sucking sound. Hey.
And people thought it was cute, and they liked it. It's the same thing with Trump. He's bombastic. He's threatening. He's got a lot of money. He doesn't apologize for his fucked up goddamn hairstyle. You know, he's got trophy wives all over the fucking place. He represents the United States, and he knows that. And there are people out here who are so fucking short-sighted, they'll vote for him just out of spite. Just out of spite.
Oh, and by the way, what's gonna happen? And I'm sure this will drive the right-wingers crazy because they think it's a foreign country. What's going to happen when Puerto Rico completely collapses?
nothing, because it's a colony, and it will be treated like any other colony. They'll probably just start restricting boat lifts and shit, and all of the people who are going to try to get out of there, like the Mario boat lift, and that'll be it. You know, and all of the Puerto Ricanos in Puerto Rico, in Philadelphia, in Nueva York, motherfucking Newark, New Jersey and shit, and Massachusetts, they're going to be trying to scramble to get their fucking relatives, out of there, which they're already doing anyway. If you watch the Spanish language news, they're doing their best to get their fucking relatives out of there, because that's how bad things have been bad in Puerto Rico for a long
man,
fucking time.
But once Puerto Rico has collapsed and it's been depopulated a little bit, I only mention this because we're smack dab in the anniversary of Katrina right about now. Once it's been depopulated a little bit and the economy's collapsed and everything and the land values go to nothing, man,
oh, yeah.
Won't it be an awesome place to go down and gentrify?
Oh, sure. It's already happening.
Oh, I know.
It's already happening. The hotels up there, they still have water. Right? They still have water. They still have water to make the Coca-Cola, because I think there's a bottling plant there, or at least there was.
Plenty of water for the Bacardi distillery, I'm presuming.
Yeah, you know, that's still going to happen. And, of course, they're going to try to do that one. It's real close. And then you're opening up things with Cuba. So you can have cigars, muchachas, música. It's going to be all of that, man. And the people are going to make money. And the folks who can't afford to leave or can't get on a raft to get the fuck out of there, they'll be working in the hotels, they'll be shining shoes, there'll be prostitution in the hotels. You know, it'll be just like everywhere else in Latin America.
It'll be Cuba without, and we all we have to do is find a new Batista.
You know, and it won't be the Italian mobsters anymore, because they really don't have that kind of power like anymore, right? I mean, they'll get a piece. They'll get a piece.
They'll wet their beak.
But, you know, hey, every ethnic group has their own mob, so those who speak Spanish will be there first, and whoever gets there first and is ready to, you know, repel borders, they'll keep it. You know, and just like Cuba, when it was Maya Lansky and the rest of these cats, they'll do business with them because they'll control the vice. Because there's got to be vice. There'll be all kinds of rich people going down there, a lot of Republicans going down there. I told you, I used to know a fellow who used to be, you know, he was a male prostitute. He said that every time the Republican convention or they had some kind of Republican meeting came to town, or he knew where one was, he was guaranteed to make enough money for the rest of the year. And he's pointed people out to me. He said, yeah, he's gay. He's gay. And you can go someplace and take advantage like that? Just like Thailand. I have no respect for the government of Thailand. They're supposed to be Buddhist. But that is the number one goddamn destination for freaks, pedophiles, women abusers, snuff filmmakers. And you know, everybody knows what's going on, and nothing's done about it. Nothing's done about it. Even after that JonBenet Ramsey thing happened, and I would like to think it was Cheney to somehow pull some strings and got that sucker put on the plane and brought over here as a distraction, even though I can't remember what the distraction was about. But, you know, folks were talking about how the sex trade and how the human trafficking was going in Asia after that. Talked about it for about 2 weeks. And then after he was out of the news, nobody discussed it anymore, right? So when Puerto Rico isn't being discussed anymore, which is hardly being discussed anyway, hey.
Well,
that's
kind of why I felt like it was incumbent on me to at least make mention of it, because it's not in the news that much. Over on MSNBC, Jose Diaz-Balart will mention it once in a while.
Yeah, they'll mention it once in a while because they're just like, wow, they're kind of fucked up over there. Look at that. Hey, it's not here. Right? Be glad that you're here.
Yeah, but how is that not microcosmic relative to the mother country?
Man, there are people on the West Coast who don't even know that Puerto Rico fucking exists. If you're not from the East Coast of the United States, you don't know a fucking thing about Puerto Rico. Most folks don't know shit about Puerto Rico. Okay?
And of course, you know, I go all the way back to the early aughts. And, gee, I remember the sex slave traffic little problem in Guam.
Guam. Well, Guam's one of them. You also had the Black Clap over there. I'm sure you heard about that. Classified, supposedly.
We don't talk a lot about. We don't talk a lot about our colonies, I think, because we don't like to remember that we have them.
No, because hey, I remember being told in school we don't have colonies; we have territories. And my father was distinct about it. He said, no, that was a motherfucking colony. We used to ship in there, you know, so on to do whatever. It's like, nah, man, it's always been denied. It's always been denied. Come on, there was no wipeout of Indians here. Indians just disappeared somehow. Manifest destiny was God, man.
Vast, you know? Vast wilderness.
This is vast wilderness. Anyway, Brad, you know, I didn't even think we were going to go on this long.
That's okay. It was a dandy, and apparently it is appreciated, as do I. This,
you know,
so
I enjoy it too.
Read up on the whole Hillary fail.
Oh, I will, because I see some. You know, I see a lot. Look, they're getting really sophisticated with their propaganda. You got to give them that. And you know, they're doing everything. I mean, when you started realizing in the mid-70s when the right wing was using grassroots, you know, knocking on doors, you know, picketing, right? Potlucks. It's like, wait a minute, that's all that lefty shit. What the fuck are you doing? Because they realized that it worked. So, you know, when James O'Keefe went to Acorn and was trying to frame a bunch of other people, basically taking lessons from the left and saying, okay, this is where they're open, this is where they're weak, because they're not coming in and saying what they actually represent. You know, when we go, we say to them, this is who we are, this is what we want to ask you, this is why we're asking you.
Yeah, for,
they don't,
you know,
do that, because if they had to do that,
for a bunch of people that hate Saul Alinsky, the right wing is quite effective at employing his tactics.
They didn't know who the fuck Saul Alinsky was, or Gene Sharp, or anybody the fuck else, until Glenn Beck stumbled upon that bullshit, because one of his little intellectual V-Dare fucking white guys, who thinks that, you know, David Duke is some kind of a fucking genius, said, hey man, have you ever heard about this Jew, Saul Alinsky? Because you know that's what it was. You know that's what it was. But see, it kills me that fucking Glenn Beck can get away with doing what he's doing. He's a Mormon. Most of these people can't stand goddamn Mormons. The Klan doesn't like Mormons. They don't trust him, right? How come he gets carte blanche to do whatever the fuck he wants to do?
Yeah. By the way, before you head out and before I head out, a little bit in the way of a semi-breaking news story. Jimmy Carter.
Sounds bad.
Has announced
yeah.
that cancer has spread to other parts of his body. He's 90 years old. He said, recent liver surgery revealed that I have cancer that is now in other parts of my body. I will be rearranging my schedule as necessary so I can undergo treatment by physicians at Emory Healthcare. And I don't want to seem bitter about this, but I'm going to be. If there's an ex-president who should live to be 500 years old, it's probably Jimmy Carter.
Yep.
Because America needs Jimmy Carter, because absent him, we're not long on conscience.
And there's negative things we can say, you know, that happened during, you know, his tenure, but...
Yeah, but he didn't start any wars.
No.
And
no.
I think he made a legitimate attempt at being a decent human being and the president at the same time. And that's damn difficult.
Well, my main thing for him was he took care of home first.
Yeah, my
you know, I have to give him that.
Yeah, there's a kick furniture moment in this article for me, though, from the AP. Jimmy, you're as resilient as they come. And along with the rest of America, we are rooting for you, Obama said in a statement.
Oh, yeah, I heard that on NPR.
And,
well, what else
and,
is he going
to no, say? No, I'm not expecting him to say anything else, but I'm not going to sit here and think that, Bubba No Brain out there who's been watching Fox News for 20 freaking years is hoping something good will happen and Jimmy's cancer will remarkably disappear. They ain't praying. No, they're not praying at the first United Mega Church and Herpetological Seminary for his well-being.
Or in Tel Aviv.
Well, no.
Or,
I imagine
in the settlements.
I imagine in the settlements they're hooting "Die Jimmy, die." But you know what?
You know.
The truth is often bitter medicine.
Well, look, like I said, he's one of the few people you can actually point to and say statesman as far as this country goes.
Yeah.
And, you know, his loss would really be a fucking kick
the
ass to this place.
In the chat room, Arthur put it bluntly. No, the right-wingers are rooting for the cancer.
Yeah. They would.
Remember, come on, it's prayer meeting Wednesday. This is the crowd that does imprecatory prayer.
Prayer.
Yeah. All right, we're out of here, Angry. Have yourself a good evening, my friend.
All right, my brother, and please support this man and help him get some equipment so he can do this across the nation. Peace.
Later. Ooh, I didn't think about it that way. Thank you, Angry. Do this across the nation. And we're getting there. We are making progress. About $1,300 to go. There's hope. But from where I sit, you know, we don't do the prayer thing and we don't ask for miracles. But our best hopes go out to Jimmy and Rosalind and the entire family. He will be missed. Anybody want to bet the funeral of Jimmy Carter is not the great big lavish masturbatory affair that Richard Nixon's or Ronald Reagan's was? Anybody? I'm a bitter person sometimes. I'm sorry. Well, here endeth the prayer meeting Wednesday lesson. Thanks to everybody who helped out this evening. Thank you, Mark. Thank you very kindly for sponsoring the whole of prayer meeting Wednesday this evening. Thank you, and not forcing me and making it possible for me not to have to do any ciphering or gazinting. Believe me, I appreciate it. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acac.org. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For men in hip-hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable. You know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about. It shouldn't be supported. You know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. And it's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
ಬರುತ್ತಿದೆ ಎಲ್ಲಡೆ ಭೀಕರವಾಗಿ ಏಡ್ಸು ಏಡ್ಸು ಏಡ್ಸೋ ನಮ್ಮ ವೈರಿಗೂ ಬಾರದಿರಲಿ ಅದು ಓಡ್ಸು ಓಡ್ಸು ಓಡ್ಸೋ
ಹೆಚ್ಚಿನ ಲೈಂಗಿಕ ಸಂಪರ್ಕದ ಸೋಂಕುಗಳು ವಾಸಿಗುತ್ತವೆ ಆದರೆ ಏಡ್ಸ್ಗೆ ಚಿಕಿತ್ಸೆ ಇಲ್ಲ
ಏಡ್ಸ್ಗೆ ತುತ್ತಾಗಿರುವ ವ್ಯಕ್ತಿಗಳಿಗೆ ನಿಮ್ಮಿಂದ ಬೇಕಾಗಿರುವುದು ಭೇದ ಭಾವ ಉಪೇಕ್ಷೆಯಲ್ಲ ಅವರಿಗೆ ಅಗತ್ಯವಿರುವುದು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಪ್ರೀತಿ ಅನುಕಂಪ ಮತ್ತು ಬೆಂಬಲ
ಕಾಂಡಮ್ ಅಥವಾ ನಿರೋಧ ಬಳಕೆ ಲೈಂಗಿಕ ಸಂಗಾತಿಗಳ ಸಂಖ್ಯೆ ಹೆಚ್ಚಷ್ಟು ಎಚ್ಐವಿ ಸೋಂಕು ತಗುಲುವ ಅಪಾಯವೂ ಹೆಚ್ಚುತ್ತದೆ ಒಂದು ಪಕ್ಷ ನಿಮಗೆ ಎಚ್ಐವಿ ಸೋಂಕು ಇದೆ ಎಂದು ಗೊತ್ತಾದರೆ ನಿಮ್ಮ ಆರೋಗ್ಯವನ್ನು ಕಾಪಾಡಿಕೊಂಡು ಹೋಗಲು ನಿಮಗೆ ಮತ್ತು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಕುಟುಂಬದವರಿಗೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ಪ್ರೇರಿತ ಸಮಾಲೋಚನೆ ಮತ್ತು ಪರೀಕ್ಷಾ ಕೇಂದ್ರದವರು ಸಹಾಯ ಮಾಡುವರು
ಚಿಕಿತ್ಸೆಗೊಳಗಾಗದ ಲೈಂಗಿಕ ರೋಗಗಳಾದ ಯೋನಿಯ ಸ್ರಾವ ಮತ್ತು ಗಾಯ ಹುಣ್ಣು ಕಿಬ್ಬೊಟ್ಟೆಯಲ್ಲಿ ನೋವು ಮತ್ತು ಸಂಭೋಗದ ಸಮಯದಲ್ಲಿ ನೋವುವಿರುವ ಸ್ತ್ರೀಯರಿಗೆ ಎಚ್ಐವಿ ಸೋಂಕು ತಗುಲುವ ಅಪಾಯ ಹೆಚ್ಚು
ಏಡ್ಸ್ ಬಾರದಂತೆ ತಡೆಗಟ್ಟಲು ನೀವು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಸಂಗಾತಿ ಇಬ್ಬರಲ್ಲೂ ಪರಸ್ಪರ ವಿಶ್ವಾಸ ಪ್ರೀತಿ ನಿಷ್ಠೆ ಇರಲಿ ನಿಮ್ಮದು ಏಕಪತಿ ಮತ್ತು ಏಕಪತ್ನಿತ್ವ ಸಂಬಂಧವಾಗಿರಲಿ
I like going to cons. I like meeting my fans. I like meeting other writers and podcasters. And I like getting a chance to meet the authors I admire, and even the occasional celebrity. You know what else I like? I like being around people, women especially, who act flirty, dress sexy, and don't mind being looked at once in a while. I'm a married man, but you know, when I stop looking, it'll be time to bury me. But you know what? Some of you fuckers are spoiling it for the rest of us. When you assholes, and you know who you are, go putting your hands where they don't belong, you're spoiling it. I've seen you fuckers. I've heard the stories. Brushing up against someone in the hall, copping a feel when you think you can get away with it, treating a human being like a sex toy because you think your desires and a bit of skin give you the right to grope anyone you like. You're spoiling it for the rest of us. Because you know what happens when someone gets treated that way? They retreat. They treat anyone who even looks at them as if they're committing a crime. They distrust. They dress down, trading short skirts and low necklines for loose t-shirts and sweatpants. They scorn, and eventually they stop coming to cons at all. And then all of us pay the price because you couldn't keep your filthy paws to yourself. So get this, you goddamn dirty ape. Next time I see this happening, I'm calling you on your shit. You are going to be the one who gets humiliated. You are going to be the one sticking your tail between your legs. You are going to be the one that's sorry you came to the con. And don't think that just because you're not a man, or that your target isn't a woman, that I won't step in just as hard, because I will, motherfucker. And it goes just the same outside the con, too. Doesn't matter where I see you, I will stop you. And I'm not the only one who's going to be keeping my eye out, either. You can fucking count on it.
There are many arguments against the death penalty. It's not a deterrent against the crimes that it punishes. Society who use the death penalty don't have lower crime rates than those that do. When a country abolishes the death penalty, they are not plunged into criminal chaos. But even if the death penalty did reduce crime rates, would it then be acceptable? The death penalty targets the economically disadvantaged. Those who can't afford good legal counsel. Those without a voice in society. There's a saying in the US, capital punishment means that those without the capital get the punishment. Statistics show this is true. But would it be acceptable if people from all sections of society were executed? Does killing a rich man make killing a poor man right? The death penalty is irreversible and results in the death of innocence. When someone is dead, a retrospective pardon is of little use to them or their family. Since 1990, in China, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, and the USA, there have been 51 recorded executions of child offenders, some as young as 14 years old. But even if no more innocents or children are killed, should we tolerate the death penalty? The death penalty is never acceptable. It abuses two of our most basic human rights. Everyone has the right to live, and no one shall be subject to torture. The death penalty obviously kills people, but it also tortures, physically by the brutal nature of execution, and psychologically by forcing individuals to wait to be killed. They wait, sometimes for decades, while others are led to their deaths. The horror of this waiting is unimaginable. Human rights are thus called because they apply to all human beings. They belong to all of us equally. An attack on these fundamental rights anywhere is an attack against all of us. The right to life is inalienable. It cannot be given, and it cannot be taken away. No matter how terrible the crime, in a world full of uncertainty, human rights are a clearly drawn line, a line between what is right and what is wrong, the line between imprisonment and execution. Every individual facing the death penalty is, whatever they stand accused of, still a human being. However much we revile them, however much we are outraged by their actions, however much we want revenge, they are still human beings. They may well have killed and tortured. They've crossed the line. But do we really want to join them?
Nicely played. Sachin is off the mark. से मेरी वॉलेट से पैसे निकाले।
अरे वो नीलम को जरूरत है।
अरे नीलम को मैं कमा के लाऊं और तू लगती रहती दरिंदा। कितनी बार समझा तेरे को, मेरे वॉलेट को हाथ मत लगाना।
मैं
जब देखो तो फालतू चीजों पर पैसे खर्च करती रहती हो। अरे मेरे के चैरिटी खोल के रखी। इतना ही अगर तेरे को चैरिटी का शौक है तो जा अपने बाप से ले।
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको। बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल।
फ्री लेनर्ड, इट इज माइंड ब्लोइंग फॉर अस टू बी हियर नाउ एट दिस लेट आवर विद लेनर्ड पेल्टियर स्टिल इन चेन्स। बुक्स हैव बीन रिटन, डॉक्यूमेंटरीज हैव बीन प्रोड्यूस्ड, कांग्रेसमैन हैव जॉइंड हिज फ्रीडम कैंपेन, ऑल फॉर नॉट। फॉर लेनर्ड पेल्टियर, अ फॉर्मर लीडर ऑफ द अमेरिकन इंडियन मूवमेंट, एम इज स्टिल नॉट फ्री। That, to anyone with a soul, is a damn shame. Many Peltier supporters put their trust in a politician named Bill Clinton, who told them that when he got elected, he wouldn't forget about the Native American leader. Their trust, like those of so many others, was betrayed once Clinton gained the office and the FBI protested. In the waning days of his presidency, he issued pardons to folks like Mark Rich and other wealthy campaign contributors. Leonard Peltier was left in his chains. I won't restate the obvious. Leonard's innocence, the blatantly unfair trial, the crooked tricks that led to his extradition. Others may do that. What is needed is more support, not from two-faced politicians, but from the people, the many, who, like me and you, know injustice when we see it. Join the movement to free Leonard Gwath Ilas, or he who leads the people. Build it, for only a mass movement can bring freedom. Thank you. On the move, long live John Africa. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
This is Bruce LaBruce, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Bruce LaBruce, www.brucelabruce.com. Thank you.
Okay, there you go. Thanks a lot.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
It ends our news section.